Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 1 month ago, a 34-year-old American Ray Davis shot and killed two motorcyclists as they approached him in crowded traffic in Lahore, Pakistan. Five bullets each, say reports, first through the windshield, then on the street, two apiece in the back. Raymond Davis is former U.S. Special Operations, former Blackwater, now a contractor for the CIA, and he's in jail at the center of a huge U.S.-Pakistan standoff. The rest of the story gets very murky, and that's where we're headed today, this hour on Point Secret War and the backstory of the American CIA agent behind bars in Pakistan. You can join the conversation. Have you caught the details? The Glock, the radio, the telescope, the mask, the ammo? Does it sound like Jason Bourne stuff? What's really going on here? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Yesterday, Pakistani television aired a shadowy video of Raymond Davis's interrogation right after the shooting in a jail in Lahore. Amid the chaos and the many questions, Davis shows ID badges from both the Lahore consulate, U.S. consulate, and the U.S. embassy in Islamabad, and identifies himself as a consultant. What you hear here is edited down, but it's a fascinating video. I urge you to go to our website, On Point Radio, to watch the whole thing, but get a sense of this.
I need to tell the embassy where I'm at.
Okay.
From America?
Yes.
From America?
Yes.
And you have gone to American embassy?
Yes. My passport.
Yes.
When at the site, I showed the police officer it's somewhere. It's lost.
With the master?
With the, it's a consulate general. It's not an ambassador.
Consulate general.
In here, Lahore, yes.
Empress Road.
Yes.
Empress Road.
Empress Road.
Yes.
And
I just work as a consultant there.
Consultant?
Yeah, with the RAO.
What's the name?
Raymond Davis.
Raymond Davis.
Raymond Davis.
Diamond Garlo.
Can I sit down?
Okay.
Can you search the car for my passport?
Two dead then on the streets in Lahore, more since then, and real outrage in Pakistan. Here's sound earlier this week near the prison in Lahore where Ray Davis is being held as a large crowd of Pakistanis protested and called for Davis to be hanged. This is where you don't want to find yourself. Joining me first today from Lahore, Pakistan, is Matthew Green, covers Pakistan and Afghanistan for the Financial Times. Matthew Green, what's the status of Ray Davis at this point? How are the wheels of justice or whatever's going on there working?
Well, there's going to be a hearing, which will be held at the Lahore prison where Raymond Davis is being held. For security reasons, I believe the authorities do not want to take him out of the jail and take him to the court where proceedings of this kind would normally be held. But I should stress that we're not expecting any speedy resolution of this case, and it looks likely that it's going to run on for several more weeks, if not longer.
I'm seeing headlines here, U.S. fears for life of CIA contractor in Pakistan prison. What's that about? Fear for his life?
Well, indeed, U.S. officials have expressed concerns about Raymond Davis's safety in the Lahore jail, where there have been incidents of inmates being killed in the past. I should stress that this is Punjab, Lahore is the capital of Punjab province. The governor of this province was killed by one of his own guards. So a degree of concern about the degree of infiltration in this forces by extremist elements. However, I should also add that Pakistani authorities...
Our line is breaking up. I'm sorry, Matthew. Our line is just too bad, but I hear they're concerned about the potential infiltration of the prison. Maybe that is the threat to Ray Davis's life. Huge upset in Pakistan about this. It has gone right to the top of U.S.-Pakistani relations. Here's President Obama in a press conference last week saying that by the Geneva Convention on Diplomatic Relations, Pakistan cannot put Ray Davis on trial because he has diplomatic immunity.
If our diplomats are in another country, then they are not subject to that country's local prosecution. We respect it with respect to diplomats who are here. We expect Pakistan, that's a signatory, and recognize Mr. Davis as a diplomat to abide by this same convention.
Easy to say, hard to get done at this point, and much messier than it sounds there in a presidential press conference. Joining us now from Washington is Mark Mazzetti, national security correspondent for the New York Times, 2009 Pulitzer Prize winner, who's been writing about American off-the-radar work, war, in Pakistan, and writing a lot about Ray Davis's case as well. Mark Mazzetti, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Take us into this backstory. There's the big relationship story that has yet to play out. But who was Ray Davis? What was he doing there? What was his background?
Ray Davis, according to U.S. officials, was a CIA contractor doing security work for a team of CIA operatives up near Lahore. As far as we can tell, Davis and other contractors, security officers, were operating out of a safe house up in Lahore, and there was a pretty large CIA presence up in that area. The U.S. government is taking sort of pains to sort of paint him just as kind of as a bodyguard, someone who protects CIA officers, someone who occasionally does route surveillance in advance of travels of CIA officers. But it's hard to tell exactly what his job was there. There is no doubt that there's a increasing CIA presence in Pakistan, and the work that the contractors do. Certainly, by the host government standards, it sort of blurs with the work that CIA officers and analysts do.
So he's a CIA contractor. That means he's not CIA staff. Is he like the guys we see walking around American ambassadors, you know, with the bulletproof vests and the Tommy guns?
Yeah, he is not full-time staff, but increasingly the CIA, since 9/11, has outsourced its security work to companies like Blackwater, companies like DynCorp, other big contractors. And so they do have an in-house security group, but it's so overtaxed because the CIA is going all over the world that they've had to look elsewhere. So Davis used to work at Blackwater, now sort of runs his own independent contractor company called Hyperion Security. Mm-hmm. And he and others basically sign on to the CIA to do these tours of duty in places like Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, places where CIA officers can't operate freely on their own. They increasingly have to go out with protection. It's sort of a source of dispute inside the CIA whether this is a good or bad idea.
We'll talk about that. You say this has pulled back the curtain on the secret war being run by the CIA in Pakistan. We'll look at that as well, but just take us back to the day. What do we know, as best we know, about what happened on the street in Lahore?
Well, there's a few things that aren't in dispute between American and Pakistani officials. What is not in dispute is that Raymond Davis killed two people at a busy traffic stop in Lahore on January 27th.
How?
He shot them with his Glock pistol, as you pointed out. Now, how he did it is in some dispute, whether he did it through the windshield, whether he got out of the car, whether he shot people entirely through the windshield, or then as they were got out of the car and shot them in the back as they were turning away. This is a matter of dispute between local police, between the U.S. And others. And after that happened, another car, an SUV, pulled up to try to sort of come to Davis's rescue. Mm-hmm. But in the process, killed a bystander on the way to get to Davis. So that was three Pakistani deaths.
And then the widow of one of the first shot killed herself, took rat poison after her husband died. So
correct.
Pakistanis
so
looking at four.
There's four dead total. And so that those are sort of the basics of the case. The other sort of things that are they're not really in dispute are the things that were found on Davis, which were the multiple identifications, the pistol, some sort of surveillance equipment, high-tech radio equipment, a telescope, that type of thing.
And so, then in the SUV that came 100 rounds of ammo and mask and I don't know what all that fell out as they were screeching around and killing one more.
It says that it fell out of the SUV. Right. I'm not quite sure exactly what the story is there. We're still trying to figure out the circumstances of what happened with the other SUV. We're told that the driver driver and possibly other people in that SUV have since left Pakistan. So
robbery attempt was the umbrella put over this. What happened here, but. What about that? I mean, a report just about a week after this came out said that the guys on the motorcycle were actually Pakistani intelligence agents who were assigned to tail Ray Davis.
Right. There's been a lot of different stories here. The U.S. says that it was a simple, it was a botched robbery attempt, that these people approached him. He had never seen them before. These people had committed multiple robberies before that day, before they met Davis. Mm-hmm. And so they were trying to shake him down for money and pulled their guns, and he responded by shooting them. There have been other reports that maybe these people had been hired by the ISI or the ISI Pakistani Spy Service or other Pakistani officials in order to tail and harass Davis. These facts are still in dispute.
He was in a rough part of town. This wasn't just Main Street.
No, this is in, it's been described as a part of Lahore that is not frequented by American diplomats and certainly by other American officials. It's unclear exactly what he was doing there. Maybe he was doing advance work for a spy meeting that was going to happen later that day. It's really hard to speculate at this point because some of the facts are still murky.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the backstory of the American CIA agent Ray Davis, now sitting in jail at the center of an enormous controversy in Pakistan. Mark Mazzetti joins us from the New York Times, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, now national security correspondent there, all over this story and the context of it, which we're looking at today. Pakistan in a real uproar over this now. It's become a threat not just to Ray Davis, not just to those who are already dead. Some say even to the Pakistani government, public outrage over this. Last week, Massachusetts U.S. Senator John Kerry, chairman of the Senate Committee on Foreign Affairs, was in the Pakistani capital, Islamabad, trying to pressure the Pakistani government to let Ray Davis go. To help the medicine go down, he made this promise.
For our government to conduct a criminal investigation. That's our law. And I can give you the full assurance of our government today that that will take place.
Bring him home. We'll try him. Not a lot of precedent for that. Rick is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Nick, you're on the air with Mark Mazzetti. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm not a spy. I wish I were a spy. But if I were a spy, I think that the last thing I'd want to do is shoot two people on a busy street. I'd want to fly under the radar. And I think that what happened is they said these men were armed and they had criminal records in their past. They probably were going to rob him, shake him down, something, and he feared for his life and responded with the training that he had. I think that now it's blown up into a political intrigue, and the Pakistanis need to save face by doing something, and they're going to hold him for a while. But if something should happen to him while he's in custody, then I fear for the long-term implications of the United States' relationship with Pakistan, and I would hope that we would take strong countermeasures against that. He's one of our people.
He's one of our people. There's talk in security circles about, you know, going in and getting him out of there, even, Mark. I mean, the sort of chatter in that intelligence community online, you know, could you put a shape charge in the side of the prison there and go through the wall and take Ray Davis out? But what about Rick's point? If you're a spy or a CIA contractor, let's say, and you're in Pakistan in a tough neighborhood in public, it does seem like the last thing on earth you'd want to do is pull out a Glock and start shooting. How are you thinking about what happened there, Mark, and why?
Well, certainly the caller is very right. The sort of first rule of being a spy is don't get caught. And but seriously, what this has done is taking the lid off a lot of these sort of swirling dynamics inside Pakistan.
What's going on?
well, there's a lot of CIA activity in Pakistan, and to some extent, the Pakistani government knows about it. Certainly, they know about the drone strikes going on in the western part of Pakistan. They know that there's a large, increasingly a large CIA presence in the country now.
And that is because, forgive me, Mark, but because the U.S. military cannot go in there, but there's a big U.S. operation there, so the CIA is running it, drone strikes and most of the rest.
For the most part, yes, there are small teams of military in Pakistan. However, the CIA, for the most part, is running the show in Pakistan. And so the Pakistani government does know about a fair amount. However, when something like this happens, it is embarrassing to them because it shows that the U.S. is operating with impunity inside Pakistan. It's a sovereignty issue. There has to be a sort of face-saving going on. So that's why you see a lot of reports out of Pakistan that the Pakistani spy service, the ISI, is angry at the CIA, that they want to sever all ties. Part of it is for domestic consumption. But I think beyond that, it's also they are concerned about what they don't know. They don't know the extent of what the U.S. is doing in Pakistan, and it's a very conspiratorial country.
You're writing about how it's moving here into urban areas, not just in the West, in the sort of border area with Afghanistan and the drone strikes there, of which there have been so many, but going into the urban area, what, as part of the hunt for Taliban or al-Qaeda leadership, which you're reporting has probably moved into urban areas?
Well, sure. I mean, just last January, January 2010, the CIA and some military operatives and Pakistani spies did a joint operation in Karachi, Pakistan, which is in the south, to arrest Mullah Baradar, who is considered to be the number two person in the Taliban. So this was sort of hailed as a joint operation, but it did show that American operatives are working in the cities of Pakistan to go after Taliban and al-Qaeda. And there's instances since 9/11. Several instances of top al-Qaeda people being taken down by American operatives as well. So you have this issue of sovereignty and the issue of how much America is operating in the country. And then feeding into that are the political dynamics in Pakistan, mm-hmm. where you have the government, which is the civilian government, which is very weak and sort of on the brink of losing power, run by President Zardari.
Yes.
Very, very pro-American. But he and if he had his wish, he probably would let Ray Davis free. However, the military, which really does run the show in Pakistan, can't do that as easily because they have to save face and they have their own reputation to protect in Pakistan.
And
adding to that
yes.
are the other political dynamics, which is up in the north in Lahore, where Zardari's principal adversary, Nawaz Sharif, and his family mm-hmm. Are in power. And they don't want and they have sort of traded on anti-American sentiment to boost their own popularity. So this is now – I mean, Ray Davis sort of found the worst place to get put in jail because it is in many ways a bastion of anti-American sentiment.
There's concern. I mean, we heard the chants. There are calls in the streets to lynch this American agent.
I think there are real concerns in Washington and among American officials in Pakistan that – sure, that someone could get into his jail cell and shoot him or poison him or something like that. I think these are real concerns. And so they are trying to get him put into sort of more secure confines. But I think there's a question of what is more secure until the U.S. can get him out of the country.
Is this really the CIA up against Pakistan's intelligence services, the ISI? I mean, we had this first report that the guys on the motorcycle were ISI agents tailing him as he looked for something. I mean, is this the CIA getting – the Pakistani intelligence has long been seen as supporting maybe even the Taliban, maybe even beyond. Is this the CIA getting too close to what's going on with Pakistani intelligence operations?
It's one of the most fascinating relationships, probably the most fascinating relationship that the CIA has is this relationship with the ISI. On one hand, they are very, very dependent on the ISI for intelligence. They're entirely dependent on the ISI for access to the country. But at the same time, as has been reported a lot, the ISI doesn't always work in America's interest. They work in Pakistani interest, and sometimes those conflict with American interests. For instance, the support for the Taliban, support for groups like the Haqqani Network, support for Lashkar-e-Taiba, which committed, among other things, the Mumbai attacks a couple years ago. So the U.S. does want to find out more about these groups that historically have been supported by the ISI. So if you're the ISI, you don't want the CIA getting too close to these groups or getting too much information because it basically comes back to you. So the suspicion that Davis might have been tailed by the ISI officers or at least people hired by the ISI is partly fed by the fact that he and the other CIA officers up in Lahore may have been getting too close to home.
Spy versus spy. Mark Mazzetti, stand by for just a moment in Washington. Joining us right now from Middlebury, Vermont, is Kateri Karmola, professor of political science at Middlebury College, author of the forthcoming book Private Security Contractors and New Wars, Risk, Law, and Ethics. Kateri Karmola, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
People in this realm point to you as the person who follows private contracting in this whole realm like nobody else. What do you see going on here?
I think Mark has done a really good job painting the story as the sort of the murky, one of the most murky aspects of a very, very murky world. And so it's very hard to be super clear about it, especially since we're seeing a spy. We're seeing contractors hired by a spy agency, the CIA. Mm-hmm. The CIA linked with the Pakistani spy agency, the ISI, that ISI already being divided against itself in multiple ways. And then I thought the caller who responded earlier, he was brilliant in, first of all, at least admitting that he wished he was a spy.
He doesn't wish he was Ray Davis right now, I would imagine.
No, but I think Ray Davis is living the fantasy life of a lot of people.
Yeah, well, maybe not at the moment. Could we focus
in
on one?
And yet was very, very – I'm sorry. I just need to say that the caller was right in that Ray Davis really stood out. The way he looked when he was arrested absolutely stands out as a Westerner, as a kind of
– Yeah, he's not undercover. He's just got like a plaid shirt on here. He looks like a guy right off any main street in America. But he's in a really – he's in a tough part of Lahore. Can we start just for a moment here with the Glock, with the pistol?
Yeah.
Now, can just any American go around if he's part of the American official presence there with arms? Does that mean it was sanctioned by the CIA chief or sanctioned by the American ambassador there? What kind of clearance does a CIA contractor need to be armed in that way, just for starters?
Well, first of all, they need a State Department-issued visa that does give them – I mean, Obama is right. This guy has official diplomatic immunity because his visa was granted by the State Department as a contractor for the State Department.
And that means signed off on by Pakistan, too, if they let him in with
absolutely.
That visa.
Yeah, absolutely. And the CIA is operating out of our embassy as well. And so especially in a place like Pakistan, almost half of our embassy is staffed by CIA and CIA contractors.
Are they all armed? Can they be? What's the deal there?
Well, one doesn't imagine that diplomatic immunity is extended to people who are armed. And so that's
but he's
that's
got
the
it
problem
here.
Of,
but
right.
Does he need the ambassador's permission to have that gun? I mean, well, I guess what I'm getting at is he's a CIA contractor. He's running around, maybe for good reason, maybe not, I don't know, but in the streets of Lahore, pretty strongly armed right here, and there's more ammo in this SUV that comes after him. Who's running the show here?
You've got multiple characters running the show. So you've got him coming in under a visa issued through a State Department as an official State Department contractor. Then you've got him under a subcontract, his company, Hyperion, under a contract to the CIA, which then probably grants him – the CIA can get him to have access to weapons. I imagine he doesn't enter the country with weapons. So he enters and then links up with the CIA. The CIA can give him the weapons that his contract demands, or he can have it. We're seeing a nexus of both CIA, special forces operators, former special forces operators, and a whole network of contractors who go under any sorts of names if they worked for Blackwater.
Ray Davis, all three of those.
He's got all three of those.
Over his career. But you know this world well. We've seen Blackwater and other contractors really sort of get out of line. But in this case, how does this look? How does it smell to you, Kateri? Does this look like cowboy stuff? Does it look like vital stuff?
It looks like rogue cowboys at their at the absolute periphery
Why?
Of law and order.
Why?
Well, it's interesting because Pakistan is in a unique position. It's not a war zone, official war zone like the Afghanistan or Iraq. And so it's a quasi-war zone in a way in that it's got areas that are war zones and we've got sort of quasi-permission to be operating there with our drone strikes and perhaps assassinations going on, certainly tracking of potential militants. So it's murky to the highest extent, much more than in Afghanistan.
At the absolute periphery of law and order, rogue cowboys. Mark, does that, I mean, that's harsh if you were Pakistani. That's not what you'd want going on in your country. On the other hand, the stakes are very big here. We've got a lot of American soldiers in Afghanistan. I mean, does this look like rogue stuff, like stuff that's, you know, tightly organized and directed by the CIA with good reason?
Well, it's certainly directed by the CIA, and at the least. And, you know, the question of how much there is a sort of separate military chain of command, American military chain of command in Pakistan, and who actually is in charge, I think has been raised inside the U.S. government. It's very right to characterize this as a quasi-war zone. It's not a declared war like Afghanistan, Iraq. However, there's a war going on. There is a bombing campaign in the mountains of Pakistan that has been intensified by the Obama administration. The CIA drone strikes have, you know, more than doubled. It's been widely reported, than under the Bush administration. I mean, that's a war. And so beyond the bombing, you've got intelligence and surveillance going on. You've got sort of special operations type missions going on. And so it's whether it's rogue or not, I think that's a question. I mean, I think a lot of it is certainly blessed by the U.S. government. But from a Pakistani perspective, certainly it seems like this sort of cowboy culture has taken over.
And it is so hot there. People describing it as maybe a watershed moment in this very, very big relationship. Scott in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Scott, you're on the air.
Yes, this sounds like a lot of mistakes and a lot of fronts by another Blackstone employee or former employee, and then equally poor judgment on the part of CIA in hiring one of these employees to do. Pretty sensitive work in a pretty sensitive area of the world.
Why poor judgment, Scott? He's former U.S. Special Forces, Green Beret. I mean, he's not, you know, just plucked off the streets of Cleveland. You know, why poor judgment?
Well, he's, you know, he looks like a Westerner. He's dressed like a Westerner. He's carrying a Glock. He, you know, fires through the windshield of his car. He's drawing attention to himself. These are not the actions of an intelligence officer. Somebody who's supposed to, you know, be secretive about his movements and, you know, undercover and that sort of thing. These are mistakes that, you know, even a new guy wouldn't make, I don't think.
Scott, thanks for your call. Our time is short before the break. Mark, you know, sort of out of control, or maybe it's just that desperate. You know, maybe there's a fight just that desperate going on to stop. I don't know what.
Well, the caller raises a very good point about, you know, what exactly the role of an intelligence officer is. There's no question that the CIA since September 11th has become much more of a paramilitary organization.
Mm-hmm.
With the drone strikes, with the sort of commando type operations.
Right. This isn't just intel. This is operational.
No, it's operations, and obviously throughout CIA's history, they've done covert action. They've done it, done paramilitary. But this increasingly, you know, we've written that the CIA is kind of becoming more like the Pentagon, and the Pentagon's kind of becoming more like the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
The Pentagon's increasing its own intelligence activity. So you have. And among the sort of old guard of the CIA, some retired officers, they see this as a problem, that traditional spycraft is espionage, going in, stealing secrets, reporting back to headquarters, and informing policymakers. It's not Jason Bourne, right? So the Blackwaterization of the CIA, for lack of a better term, they see it as a bad thing. They think it's getting people in trouble overseas, and that it should not be the work of the CIA. But it is what increasingly the CIA is being called on to do. So whether Ray Davis acted as a rogue or acted the way he was trained to or ordered to is a question. But there's no question there's other Ray Davises out there that are doing this kind of thing.
This poor guy is in trouble now. Whatever happened there, you quote his sister saying, "The only thing I'm going to say is I love my brother. God knows I love him. I'm just praying for him." He's in the Pakistani prison, 4 dead in Pakistan. Pakistan very upset about this. Mark Mazzetti, Kateri Kamola, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the quite incredible backstory of the American CIA agent, Ray Davis, now sitting in prison in Lahore, Pakistan, at the center of an enormous controversy and what may have been going on there. Mark Mazzetti is with us, Pulitzer Prize-winning correspondent for The New York Times. He's written in detail about America's secret, not-so-secret, war in Pakistan, CIA in charge. Ray Davis, a contractor for the CIA, who last month had the Glock in hand firing away on a crowded street in Lahore. Two dead right there. Another when the SUV came out to try and rescue him. Another when the widow of one of the dead took rat poison and killed herself. Pakistan absolutely up in arms about this right now. And Americans learning more about what's going on in that country and who's doing it. Kateri Carmola, also with us from Middlebury College, author of Private Security Contractors and New Wars, Risk, Law, and Ethics, coming out very soon. A big expert on what's going on with contracting and American operations abroad. We've got lots of response online. Tim says, Blackwater background? Seriously, when will the U.S. government officials stop giving these mercenaries a blank check? BHA says the CIA must be reading Doonesbury, kind of critical there. Kevin says, I don't believe governments should offer diplomatic immunity to contractors. They're rogues and criminals by nature. I really don't know about that. There's a lot of contractors out there doing a lot. Some of it may be protecting you, Kevin, but some may be off base as well. Let's go to Ryan in Columbia, South Carolina. Ryan, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Keep the good shows coming. Like
Thank
it.
You. What do you know, Ryan?
I read an article yesterday on the Indian version of Yahoo News online.
Okay.
That said when he was arrested, the Pakistanis found documents in his possession about an operation for the CIA to give radioactive material to Al-Qaeda, like dirty bomb type material.
An American CIA contractor giving radioactive material to Al-Qaeda? Why?
I'm not sure if this was perhaps a sting operation or, as the article suggested, an attempt to have an excuse to widen military operations.
Wow. And you're reading the Indian version of Yahoo online. We all know the world these days. That's amazing. Ryan, I've just had handed to me.
I should back him up that was actually on the Russian news as well.
The
that
Russian
same rumor, yeah. Yeah. So that's making the rumor conspiracy rounds.
And
he's not that far off.
Which gets right into print in Pakistan. Here, I'm just handed this from the Pakistan Observer. Market says Raymond was giving N material, nuclear material, to terrorists. Fissile material? The claim is to be used against the United States itself in order to ignore an all-out war to reestablish the West hegemony over a global economy. Wow, that is just months away from collapse. I mean, these things get ratcheted up very high in a hurry, but I don't know. Mark, well, take a report like that. What do you say to it? Here's Ryan in the Carolinas reading it.
Yeah, it's amazing that Ryan would be able to sort of access this. It is sort of
but
amazing
we do.
World, but I don't buy it. I've learned that if he's reading the sort of Indian version, I've learned basically not to trust what the Indians say about the Pakistanis or the Pakistanis say about the Indians. There's a lot of conspiracy. There's a lot of rumor mongering. That the radioactive thing doesn't make really any sense to me, but you know, it's almost beside the point whether it makes any sense. You know, these rumors and conspiracies, especially on the street in Pakistan, are believed, and people do tend to assume the worst about what the U.S. is doing. And some of it is fed, I believe, by the ISI. They have their own reporters on payroll,
yep.
And mm-hmm. will put
Raise
some of this
heat.
Information out.
Yep.
And it is only increasing the sort of suspicion between the two sides. And I'll give an example. For instance, 2 months ago, the CIA station chief in Pakistan was pulled out of the country pretty hastily because his name surfaced as part of a lawsuit brought by victims of the drone campaign, but it was also widely reported in the Pakistani press. And a lot of U.S. officials are convinced that it was the ISI that leaked his name. It's pretty hard to find out who the CIA station chief's name
yep.
is. And so this was retribution for, you know, the head of the ISI being named in an American lawsuit. So it's people are using the press and people are using public sources of information and websites to participate in the spy war.
Do you think it's possible that he thought those were ISI Pakistani agents on that motorcycle, and that they, that his life was threatened by Pakistani intelligence? Did he pull out his Glock and blast away?
It's certainly hard to know what he was thinking at the time. I don't know. We're still trying to find out.
Everybody's saying robbery.
Right. I mean, we're still trying to find out exactly what happened in the days before the event, and we're obviously still reporting. I think that, you know, if he really did think that it was the ISI who was behind it, he would have known the stakes of shooting them.
Yeah.
But if he felt like his life was threatened, you know, maybe he figured he'd shoot first and before they shot him. It's very hard to know exactly.
Let me get a call, if I may, from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Michael is on the line. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I'd like to make a comment about the deniability of these contractors. It seems to me that the CIA and our government hires these people to do things for the purpose of deniability if they're caught doing anything that's embarrassing.
But they're not denying. The President of the United States is standing up and saying, he's ours, he's immune, send him home. The head of the CIA, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I mean, but we'll look at it, Michael. I appreciate your call. Let me hold that thought for 1 second here. Thank you, Michael. Ahmed in Montreal, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom. Basically, I want to say even if he is a diplomat and under diplomatic immunity, he should be tried in a court of law and found either guilty or innocent of murder, because that's what happened.
But
so
it's
if he's found guilty of murder, face the consequences.
Why? Diplomatic immunity means you don't go to trial in that country. You go home.
Yeah, but if there was a diplomat in the USA who killed a U.S. citizen, I don't think the USA would say send him home. That's a double standard.
Yeah, Ahmed, we've got it. Steve in Savannah, Georgia. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
I'm just curious about the other side of the coin. Say a Pakistani diplomat shot 3 Americans in the United States. Would we be so eager to send him home, and what would the public outcry be here?
It's a good question. It's a real question. I mean, you rarely get multiple murders by somebody with a diplomatic passport, but it's a real question. I appreciate that. And one more here. Peter in Boston. Thank you for calling, Peter. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Pete, one of your more conservative listeners.
Okay, good.
Great show, as usual. Listen, I think we all need to step back. And first, remember, I think one of the reporters mentioned that we are at war in Afghanistan. I mean, this fellow, he's got all the criteria. He's stepped up, and he's working with her. He's contracting out. Any pay he's making, I think, he's underpaid. There's not too many people beating the door down to do this fellow's job. Secondly, he's out there working this. People really have to understand that it's an undeclared war in Pakistan. The interdiction that's going between the Taliban jumping back and forth. Have you ever heard that anybody in Pakistan acknowledge that there was an airstrike or a missile strike where they actually killed combatants that weren't civilians involved? Every time that there has been anything that's a criticism, you know the Pakistanis are not going to acknowledge anything. But the most important, this fellow, it seems like he was doing his job. He's not a reporter. People say, should he have a weapon? Well, what should he be like, a reporter, and say, hey, don't shoot me? He knows they're going to. What happened to Danny Pearl? This fellow is a professional. I think we're jumping the gun to kind of like ready to throw this guy under the bus.
Peter, we got it. Our time is short, but I really appreciate your call. We've got that perspective loud and clear. Jumping the gun. Kateri, what about it? Do you look at it that way? I mean, it's a tough conflict, and it's
absolutely
not easy to be in the middle of it. You know, maybe we should say hoorah, huzzah, but an awful lot of Pakistanis are not saying that.
Well, the legal murkiness of it means that it becomes a very political question. And I think the political aspect of this has shifted just because of the ongoing events in the Middle East that are about what Mark was pointing out earlier, about a kind of sovereignty of the people over their own government's actions and the involvement of the U.S. in participating in what many see as illegitimate governments, the people who are there. So I think somehow the fact that Raymond Davis was arrested during the last couple of weeks, and we've really shifted our understanding of thinking that we're really necessarily at continuing to be at the same kind of war with extremism around the globe, in which we might have had a different attitude toward him, to now suddenly seeing that there are a lot of governments that don't seem legitimate to their own people and are behaving in ways that kind of accentuate that illegitimacy.
There's a real conflict going on here. Yeah. On the other hand, as our Savannah caller said, if this happened on the streets of the United States, you know, what would Americans think about it?
You can release someone from diplomatic immunity, and that's happened when someone has committed a crime attached to an embassy in the U.S., they were released sometimes from the diplomatic immunity and stood trial here, and it's still under the U.S. Patriot Act. He would have to come back and stand trial here in the U.S.
But the U.S. is hardly releasing him here. They're standing up
to
the highest
levels
to defend
him.
Kateri Mark, absolutely. Please stand by. With me right now, and I'm very glad to have him for a Pakistani perspective on what's going on here, Adil Najam, professor of international relations at Boston University, and a Pakistani just returned Tuesday from 5 days in Lahore. So he's coming right out of the center of what's going on in Pakistan, which I think has been kind of underreported given how much fixation there's been on Tunisia and Egypt and now Libya. Adil Najam, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here. Talk to us about what's going on around this Ray Davis CIA contractor case in Pakistan right now.
I've known you for a long time, so I'll say this with all great respect. But the conspiracy theory that you told about the nuclear weapon is exactly that. It's a conspiracy theory. But it's exactly,
I'm not telling you. It's out there.
It's exactly the same type of conspiracy theory that this show right now and your guests have been spinning.
What do you
this
mean?
Guy is not a diplomat. He does not have immunity. I've been a professor of diplomacy for 6 years. There's nothing in the Vienna Convention. There's a bunch of lies here. This was a case of cold-blooded murder. This was a case where he says he's from the Lahore consulate. The U.S. embassy says he's from the Lahore consulate. The next day, he turns out to be from the Islamabad embassy because that is the only way you can get the immunity.
So you don't even accept the facts.
It is not. We are missing the point.
No, wait, but did he have a diplomatic passport?
No,
or not?
He did not. No, he did not have a diplomatic.
The government claims that he did.
The government of Pakistan has been asking for the U.S. for proof that he has a diplomatic passport. The U.S. government has not provided it. Pakistan television, every station has been brandishing this photocopy of a letter, and I wish the New York Times also picked it up, which shows that the U.S. government actually did not want him to have.
So you say
status.
He's a perfect rogue and therefore murderer by your lights.
That's not the question. To me, all of this is spinning the story so that the real story is left out. The real story is you have a really important international relationship here, which is really unraveling here because we on both sides, Pakistanis are doing this too. There are questions that the Pakistanis aren't asking. For example, who were those two guys who got killed?
Yeah.
The questions that the New York Times hasn't asked for 3 weeks.
Okay.
In some ways, just putting
let's hear
sort
him.
Of...
He's right here. Mark Mazzetti's here.
I mean, the New York Times credibility in Pakistan or any U.S. newspaper is like the People's Daily.
What are the questions? Let's hear it.
The questions, for example, why have we not in the U.S. heard anything serious about this story for 3 weeks?
Well, why Mark Mazzetti's been out there reporting on it.
No, he hasn't. Well, this happened a month ago. This happened a month ago.
Okay, too slow.
You have not just too slow. His wife doesn't show up. We are not even sure if the name is right. It's not until The Guardian breaks up the story. The Washington Post claims itself that it knew the story, kept it hidden because it was told that it shouldn't.
The Times says the same thing. They knew it, but they were asked by the government not to put it out. But we've got that. Too slow. What else?
It's not just too slow. It seems that they are spinning the story. Again, what Mark is doing here is taking a U.S. position and spinning it. I do not think, as scholars in my case, as journalists in his case, we do a service to the Pakistan-U.S. relationship.
I've known you both, you
to,
and Mark, for a long time. I respect you both, but we take your point, but give us your other questions because our time is short. For the New York Times, let's say. What else?
There are whole hosts of questions here. How many Raymond Davises are there?
American contractors running around with a Glock in their
right
pocket?
Right now, if you go to Pakistan, people are going to look at you, people who know you forever, and say, does he have a Glock?
Yeah.
And there are all these people running around. You have a really important relationship here. And by calling this a war, you're turning him into a soldier. By calling him a diplomat, you do a disservice to all the wonderful men and women that I've worked with who are real diplomats. This is not what diplomats do. Diplomats do not shoot people 3 times in the front and then twice at the back.
What's at stake here?
What's at stake here is the future of the single most important and single most messed up international relationship there is between Pakistan and the U.S.
How would it fall if it falls on the back of this? What's the sequence you're worried about?
I think both the governments, but certainly the U.S., really needs to step back and not escalate this. Both governments have really played their cards badly. The U.S. could have had deniability. Here was a guy, if in fact he is this mercenary spy or whatever.
Call him a rogue, cut him
call
loose.
Call him a rogue. That's what you do with spies. When spies get caught, You don't acknowledge them. You
but everybody would have known he was American, and it wouldn't be hard to figure out he's working for the CIA.
We went through the Cold War the same way. We went through the Cold War the same way. The Soviets did the same way.
It's standing by him, you say?
That's what spies do. That's what spies do. Once you are caught, you don't say who you are, and your government walks away.
Well, you say it's not a war, but people are using that language. They're saying there is a secret war. Mark uses that language. There is a secret war,
isn't
there?
Using the word war, we turn him into a soldier, and we turn an act of murder in the name of the U.S. taxpayer, in your name,
yes,
an act of murder,
yes,
of a 19-year-old, the suicide of a woman who did not need to be dead, the running over of a guy who was just standing there, all in your name. We turn that into an act of war and therefore legitimate. And that does not do the U.S. proud.
If this is murder, it's a shame, and I don't want it in my name. But how do you know that it's not in... There is a conflict going on here. How do you know that it's not somehow...
What I do know is there was a guy who was standing on a road and a U.S. consulate car comes and runs
him
over.
Coming to rescue
Davis. Is
that
what the U.S. stands for? I hope not.
Mark Mazzetti, I want to give you just a minute. We've got to respond here. You see the depth and hit, and this is... You know, Adil Najam is a kind of a global man. This is not just, you know, your pushcart vendor in Lahore. What do you say to this, Mark?
Well, I mean, I guess a few things. First of all, I'm not often accused of spinning on the U.S. government's behalf. But
in Pakistan, you are all the time, Mark. I'm sorry.
Okay.
You must be a good guy, I'm sure.
Okay. So on the issue of whether the Times has covered this, I mean, we've my colleague Jane Perlez, in our bureau chief in Islamabad, has written fairly extensively on the whole issue, and we are trying to get to the bottom of this. I mean, if there's still facts that we don't know, it's not for lack of trying. That's for sure.
Are you open to that? Adil Najam thinks the U.S. government is lying top to bottom about his status in the country. Does that still seem an open question to you?
It's an open question to me what exactly was going on in this whole thing. So let's leave it at that, and we will hopefully find out more.
Kateri, we're going to have you back here. But we've got your rogue cowboy characterization. Mark, we've got your reporting. And Adil Najam, we hear your deep concern about a very big relationship. Is there a way to repair this very short here? What would it be?
I hope there is. I think both countries have to retreat. I think the U.S. should apologize. Let the law run. Like the Georgian case, there was a Georgian diplomat in New York where the same happened.
It's huge. Adil Najam with Boston University, thank you for being here. Mark Mazzetti, Kateri Kamola, thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.